Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're now listening to the Black Variant on RNC Radio.
About to turn my name to Lil Skate. My name Benz in. Flip, turn my name to Lil Skate.
Yo, welcome back to another edition of House Calls. It's your boy Van. Thank you for listening. Appreciate all you guys. Shout out to Brunel. He's on location right now. He's not on this episode. But yo, we got a very special guest. One of my bestest friends in the world, probably one of my longest friends too. Known this nigga a long time. my sister Rihanna's on the show, man. Make some noise for Rihanna.
I love your introduction.
I like that, right?
I'm gonna save that so that you know I have proof.
Frame it, whatever you gotta do. So how are you, Rihanna? How are you feeling today?
I feel like I got like a train. Okay, no, that sounds so bad.
Yeah, that's crazy. What camera may say, hey, yo.
No, let me just say, I just feel like today kicked my ass. I'm going to tell you that. Like, right. Just kicked my ass.
A lot going on in the world.
A lot going on in the world, at work.
Niggas warring. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just one of those days, you know.
It's a lot of shit going on, man. But we're gonna start this show like we do every show. What are you feeling? What are you not feeling in the world right now? It could be anything.
What am I not feeling in the world? Mm-hmm. I'm not feeling people's ignorance.
Okay.
You know, I feel like people are willfully ignorant, and even with this whole situation going on in Israel, the genocide that's happening, I feel like people are choosing to be ignorant and ignore the facts and just help promote false information. So I'm not feeling that.
You think it's an escapism type of thing?
One more time?
You think it's an escapism type of thing? Like people are choosing to ignore just to try to escape what's really going on out there?
Yeah, maybe you could say that, but also just think that people just like to be willfully ignorant. Like, yeah. I don't know. I feel like people just choose ignorance. I feel like that's just the easier option and right. Just blind loyalty to Israel for whatever reasons. And there's also like not so smart people too. I think you understand that people are just not smart when they talk and you're like, oh, you are not the sharpest tool in the toolbox.
Yeah,
you know,
some people just talk to like hear themselves talk, like, you know, people say it's like a real thing.
So. Yeah. And then people who are like, oh, Israel is, you know, it's like people don't understand biblical Israel and then like real life Israel. It's just, I don't know. It's just, you are just dumb. But
and you would think with all the information at our fingertips that, you know, stuff like that would be easy to Google. Shit, even if you got to watch a YouTube video on it, it's right there, you know.
But, you know, people don't fact check. And I feel like
at all.
Like people, like if I made a video, if I tweeted something, people would take me at face value instead of saying, let me see if this actually is correct. Because I feel like they rely on other people to fact check. And so it's good enough if somebody else says it's true. Right. You know,
I think just media literacy overall is just like it's in the toilet, man. Like people just like don't know how to decipher things for themselves or maybe they just don't care. Maybe they just don't give a fuck, like you said.
Yeah, I feel like it's a combination of both. I feel like media literacy, because I also feel like there's media in so many different forms now than it's ever been. Right. And so I feel like there's more ways to be deceived by media as well. But then also it comes, I don't want to say laziness, but for lack of a better word, there's like a laziness that goes a part of just not wanting to click out of Twitter really quick and then just do some research on your own to figure it out, because that's the harder route to take. So it's just easier to take this, you know, person's tweet for base value instead of just doing the work yourself. I feel like, but I also feel like people just take the easy way out all the time, you know? Right.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I also think, like, I think the sheer amount of platforms now, like, giving you, like, quote-unquote news is just, like, probably overwhelming, too, you know?
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, we went from the newspaper being the primary to then TV, and then now it's, like, on your phone, you have apps. And so it's all about like how you receive information the best, and then making sure that the people who are kind of putting out information on those outlets are actual journalists too. Like, or like, are you following actual journalists and people who understand the craft itself, you know?
Yeah, because it's a real art to journalism. I think, you know, today it's kind of been like any nigga with a phone is a journalist.
The journalist, yeah.
Yeah, but like,
and in some ways, that's like it works. You know what it is? I feel like people will see one person who is successful without going the traditional route, and then they'll think that they can do it too.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's like, oh, you don't need the education because like this person was able to do it and achieve it without the formal education. So like, oh, I'm gonna just do it like that too. But I feel like there's so much that goes into it. And I feel like there are exceptions to rules for a reason. If it was like the standard, it wouldn't be the exception. So like, yes, this person was able to achieve having integrity while being a journalist and sticking to, you know, the path correctly, but that doesn't mean that you are going to do that as well. But I feel like we see the people next to us doing it and we're like, okay, so I'm gonna skip out. I'm gonna cut the line and go the easy way of achieving that thing, you know?
And we seen that with, not to get off track, but even like the whole Keith Lee thing, niggas cutting the line, you know what I mean? People were kind of clowning them for not cutting the line, which I thought was pretty funny.
You know, I was like, what are you guys mad at? I feel like that showed me that people will be mad at anything. Yeah, like,
you really you're just mad do you,
because like, you're mad because he wants to make sure that restaurants are serving all paying customers equally no matter what, because you're a paying customer. Like, what are you really mad at? Right. Don't you want to be treated just as well as a celebrity when you are a paying customer in a place? Like, what do you, I don't know. And I feel like what pisses me off is that like, you only care about his credentials when it's a not so good review. I can't even say it's a bad review, because has he ever even, when it's just not a favorable review.
Right.
But God, but if it's a good review, you're like, oh, it's Keith Lee, it's Keith Lee. It's just like, go to hell.
Right, and I think that's what keeps his word so strong, is that he's like, I feel like he's doing things pretty ethically, you know? He want to be treated like everybody else. He's not looking for the superstar treatment, you know?
Right. And so it's just like, why, like, really, why are you mad?
They don't have a reason. They don't have a reason.
People want to be mad at the government. There's so much things to be mad at. Being mad at Keith Lee is literally a waste of emotion and resources. Like, do better.
And I think there's like, I think there's just a overall problem with the whole like restaurant service thing. I think people don't really go to restaurants for food and customer service anymore. I think it's just all vibes, you know.
Do you really want to entertain this?
Yeah, we pie today.
Do you really want to entertain this customer service conversation? Because we can have it across so much different industries. Yeah. I feel like in the food industry, I feel like so much industries. I don't know what changed over time, but like the feeling of customer service, or, you know, making sure the customer needs are met, like that changed over time, like that sentiment. And now it becomes like making sure the owner's needs are met, you know, like it's changed. And I'm like, maybe not say all places, because it's not all places, but I definitely see that shift. Especially because I've been to Atlanta, so like I've been to restaurants, and I understand like it's not a real place.
Did you have good service when you was there, like, or was it like?
There was this one restaurant that I went to, though, two restaurants, but I can't remember the other one's name. There was this one restaurant called Apartment 4B, and I thought the service was great. I would go back, and it was a great vibe too. But that's like the only
Was it like one of the grass wall hookah type of spots? Like,
there was no hookah. I don't remember there being a grass wall, but don't quote me on it. No, it was, and like it kind of doubled as like a lounge area, like in the evening time, especially like on Thursday, Friday. Like, no, it was really a vibe though. Like, yeah, they'll have like live music, like a live DJ, and it wasn't like overbearing because
it wasn't like a grown and sexy spot either. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, old people.
No. There were like people like our age, and they're like a lot of professionals. I was able to connect with people like mad randomly. It was a vibe when I was there. It was. Okay. But I've also been to some places where I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, is this standard? Like, and I always tell people, like, renting a car, because I rented, both times I was in Atlanta, I rented a car, and it's just like, for what? Because this bitch is just valeted every single place I'm going to. And it's like, if you don't even know if you're going to be in a spot for like an hour, but you got a valet. So now I feel like I got to get my money's worth out of this freaking valet. You know, so it's
it was a big valet kind of scene.
It's situation a there. Big valet city. Like, okay. It was to the point where, the first time I went for my birthday weekend, like a couple of years ago, I ended up just leaving my car because I had a hotel in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So I ended up valeting my car at the hotel.
You're saying downtown?
Child, I don't know where I was saying. You can't ask me questions about directions. You know that's not my strong suit. But it was to the point where like I valeted my car at the hotel and we just Ubered places because it was just like, what's the point of me driving? Like, mm-hmm. It don't make no sense for me to drive because everywhere I go, we gotta, but then it's like Uber, you also paying so much in Ubers because you're going from one spot to the next. So it's like the comfort of having a car, you don't even get to enjoy that comfort for real. So yeah.
How much was the valet? Like,
it ranges, but you giving them like $20.
$20.
$20, $15. Like that's like standard. $15, $20.
Damn.
Exactly. Just to go to a spot. That could have been a drink, you know? That's like drink money.
Yeah. Tip money for the actual like, waiter.
Yeah.
Like,
you know what I'm saying? Like, but you're spending it on valet. And it's not even like they parking and shit up is super exclusive. It's just like they blocked off this thing and you gotta park in this. They parked in there. People can still break into your car.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They can still get robbed. Like, you know.
Yeah. So it's just, it's very annoying. It's very annoying. So like, Keithley's experience, I feel like that's been so much people's experiences and it don't even surprise me, you know?
Yeah. And you see a lot of people like, I haven't seen many people trying to refute what he was saying. A lot of people like, they actually like live in Atlanta. From there, they've been co-signing what he's saying.
Yeah, because he's speaking facts. Like, some of the rules, I'm like, do y'all work in hospitality? Like, I would think the restaurant industry is a part of hospitality, right? In a sense, yeah,
I think they don't see it as that, though. That's what's just messed up.
Right, and I don't think they see customer service as, like, making, like, creating an environment that you want people to come back to. Mm-hmm. Like the whole, you can't see parties of four or more, like more than four. Like, what?
Yeah, like, what is that? But you got to get a private room for five of your friends? Like, what the fuck?
It just made no sense. And I just feel like the rules just make you just not want to. And I'm not saying like all rules, but some rules I could understand. Some certain
like
rules,
what rule do you agree with?
Right. It's not even agreeing with it. I feel like if it's not, I feel like I understand the whole. What rule do I agree with? Let me think.
Yeah, I was about to say, no sweatpants, no hats, no niggas rule.
No, actually, I don't know what rule I agree with. I gotta really think about it because I'm thinking.
All right.
Maybe check over a certain amount because maybe that's just annoying to do as like a server or something. Like
a nigga busting out a check in a restaurant is crazy.
No, like separating checks.
Oh, like splitting them?
Yeah, like, you know, if like people want to split them like 30 different ways, I can understand there's like a limit to how many checks they'll split just for time purposes. That I could probably understand just because it probably is time and, you know, consuming to do that. But yeah.
I was in a spot in Rockville Center and they was like, they had this machine that could split the things at four or five different ways. I thought that was pretty cool.
Unless you tell them in the beginning, I feel like if you tell people in the beginning you want separate checks, then I think it's easier to do it like
they
that.
They can't really fight that, I don't think, you know, if you let them know, you know.
But then again, like, I also don't think that applies to me and like my group of friends because in regard to dinner, we're not one of those we're not arguing over who's paying for what. Like, I don't even like the whole conversation. That whole conversation drives me crazy. Because my sentiment on that is, do what makes you comfortable. Do what makes your friend group comfortable. And have a nice life. Like, it don't have to be this discourse every 3 to 5 business days. Just,
you know, it has to, because it's Twitter, man.
And it's always something like, oh, what? And the discourse always to me comes down to, do what makes you and you're comfortable. You and your friends figure it out, because it's gonna look different for everybody's friend group. It looks different for everybody's situation. So do what makes you comfortable. Like, exactly. That is it. That's the answer. That's it. Have a nice life. Welcome to my TED Talk.
Exactly. Exactly. So what are you feeling? What's going on in the world?
I feel like there's just so much going on in the world that, like, to be hyper aware is, it also comes with, like, sadness. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, you can't help but feel sad when you realize, like, all the genocide that's happening, all the, just the ugliness of the world. People who are without houses, homes, food, poverty, like, the job market and how sick that is. It's like, to understand everything that's going on in the world, the freaking climate, right? Just last week, 80 damn degrees.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's
frozen outside.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like you can't help but be sad, you know?
Yeah, but like, what are you feeling? Is there anything you like going on? Any of your personal joys, you know? You gotta be something.
That I like that's going on in the world?
Yeah, it could be anything. Or just in your world, you know?
What's going on in my world? I live a very boring life. I tell people that all the time. I feel like you don't think I do, but I feel like I think I do. So, I mean, I just celebrated my birthday, so I feel like that was that was hype for me. And I feel like we in the NFL season, so if you know me, you know I love football. I'll be watching it and stuff, both college and professional. So I'm tapped in. I have trips planned in December and January.
That's good. Those are things
Right, exactly. So I do have some good going on in the world, like in my life, I do. And new music, because that Brett album is fire and it's still in rotation. You're bugging. You're bugging. What else? I feel like I do have positives. It's not all negative. There are some positives.
Yeah, I thought you was going, I want to kill my mom. I want to kill my dad. Shit.
No, I'm good. All right, I thought you meant like outside of like me.
Oh, just like just people. Feeling in general.
Yeah.
But all right. So I want to start this off by asking you. I usually ask this to most of the guests, but like, how would you describe yourself as a child?
As a child,
what was young Rihanna like? What was her interest?
Young Rihanna was very adventurous. Mm-hmm. She wanted to be one of the boys. So, like, I grew up with all men in the house, like all boys. I grew up with boy cousins and my brothers. Mm-hmm. So I always wanted to do what they did, you know. So I was like, I had my girly moments too. So like, I was a girly girl, but then I also was like a tomboy in a sense. And I wanted to be treated like them. So like, and when I heard no, it was just like, so you, what you really mean is find another way.
Right.
You know? So I was very adventurous, very, I was smart, very smart. And I always, I don't want to say sneaky, but, like my mom always talks about like when I snuck out the house and went to Taboo when I was in high school.
That's a rite of passage though.
I just like, girl, you gotta let that go. It happened.
Real history right there.
And I have fun and I'll do it again.
What kind of activities were you into? Like just sports. I know sports heavy.
Herma made sure we was in everything that was offered. Okay, so let me think. When I was elementary school, I was in the chess club. I was a Girl Scout. I was in the travel club. I swam. I danced.
I was Girl Scouts. You was trapping cookies, nigga.
Girl Scouts was a vibe in the beginning, but towards the end, it was still a vibe, but it turned into like food meetups. Like we used to call it food scouts because we were just link up and go out to dinner and stuff like that. But like in the beginning, You know, used to do, you have to like earn patches, right? Like, so you have to do things. So we used to be having them bake off. We see, you know, doing all these cultural or initiatives or things like that. So it was pretty fun. It was pretty cool.
That's not like some gang shit. You got to earn your stripes, nigga.
Low
like,
key. And we had to say a pledge. We had to say a pledge every meeting.
Take a pledge? So hand over the heart tech?
Yeah, and we had like a gang, not a gang sign, but I'm going to say a gang sign. Like, we had a little sign thing that we did.
And
you rep your troop. So it's like, I was troop 1159. Like, that was my troop. That was my set. Those are my people.
This is some gang shit. The Girl Scouts, man, they push harder than the drug dealers.
Low key, you trapped my heart. Listen, my mom used to hate when I stopped to bring home that cookie sheet. She used to be like,
"Oh, the sheet with all the boxes you can order." And shit.
You had to order them cookies. She used to be like, "If you don't get that thing on my face,"
because them things weren't cheap. Like the Girl Scout cookies, like they're not cheap, you know.
Listen, I have to trap. What you want me to do?
Then you have to sell like a certain amount too. Or?
You're encouraged. I'm not gonna say you
encouraged. Yeah, gun to your ribs.
You're encouraged to sell, but yeah, no, it was a vibe.
Selling all that for a keychain. It's crazy.
For a patch.
type shit. Man.
Mm-hmm. I was a brownie and a junior.
What's that like? Different levels.
Different levels. Like when you're elementary school, you're a brownie, and then if you like when you're in middle school, between like certain ages, you're a junior.
Oh, so it's like how they section it off.
Yeah. So you're with people, in your own age group. You're not with, like, I'm not in the same group as, like, an 18-year-old if I'm in elementary school.
Right. When'd you stop going?
Middle school? Maybe, like, 7.
You wanted out the set?
I wanted out. But I think also, like, I was allowed to decide more of my own activities. I still had to be active. My mom was one of the moms that like, you're not going to be no couch potato. Like, you're not going to just be home after school every day. Like, I don't know what it felt like to go home straight after school. Like, I was
That's all I did.
Yeah, we know.
But
I don't know what that felt like. So, but by the time I was in middle school, she allowed me to make more of the decisions of like what activities I would be a part of versus her making the decision. So like more of my activities just took me away from Girl Scouts over time, and it became less of like an interest. But like we were all like that, because remember, Kelsey and Camille were also in Girl Scouts with me.
Oh yeah.
Right.
That's a wild troop. That's a wild troop. Were you naturally into like sports and shit, or did you like grow to love it? Like,
I think it was a mixture of both, depending on what sport you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I remember when I fell in love with track, actually. I don't think I've ever told Kelsey this, but I remember as Girl Scouts, actually, we went to support her. She ran for like Uniondale, like you know how they have like leagues for like the town or whatever.
Right.
So she was a part of track, and field for that. And I remember she had like a track meet and we all went to support her, and just seeing her running and being there in that atmosphere, like that made me fall in love. Like it was like an instant, like I've fallen in love with track. I want to do this, like I want to run. And so I joined in middle school, like our track team at Lawrence Road, and the rest was history. Like, so like track became my love. Like if you know me, you know how much I loved running track. I loved just being out there. It just gave me this adrenaline rush, like this freedom. I don't know how to explain it. It was like so euphoric in a sense.
So was it the actual competition that got you into, or the applause, or like just the technicality of the sport?
It was a little bit of everything, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like for waiting for the gun to go off. So that feeling that you get of waiting for that gun to go off to start, it just did something to me. And then like when you're out there running, it's like nothing else matters besides me and my feet, you know, mm-hmm. like be where your feet are. And I just feel like it was like freeing in the sense of none of my worries were in my head when I'm running,
right,
you know,
right.
Because this is all it is for me. And then of course, like winning is always a good feeling, all the different things. But for me, Cause I would tune people out really. So it's like if you said my name, I wouldn't hear you necessarily, because I was just so much in my head. You know, right. It was like that time for me to just be with myself in a sense. So,
wow, that's interesting. That's interesting. But also I wanted to ask you, like, as you continued on with track in high school, I wanted to ask you, how did did you prepare for like different track meets, like mentally? Like, were you the music kind of person, sit in the corner, or were you listening to, like, get hype stuff? Like, how were you prepared for like a track meet?
I'm one of those people who, like, don't talk to me because I'm talking to myself. Like, I'm talking to myself. I'm praying. I'm just giving myself motivation. When I'm there, I do have headphones on and I'm pretty like focused. Like, I'm laser focused. After the meet is over, after the race is over, like, I'll be more friendly. But the hour leading up to the race, I'm pretty much locked in. Like, and I'm like, I don't like to break my focus. So like, especially when, if you're running like a relay, there are times where like you're lined up with all the girls that are running your leg or whatever, right? And some of them will like try to introduce themselves.
Are they shit talking? Is there any shit talking going on?
There probably is. But like, the thing is like, I would tune everybody out. So like, people probably thought like I was a bitch, like whatever, because it's like they're all talking to each other on the sidelines, getting ready, da 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 da. And I'm like talking to myself. I'm just sitting there.
So they think you crazy. You talking to yourself.
Well, like, I'm not like moving my lips. You know, but yeah, I would just be talking or like saying things in my head or like singing a song, like, but like, it's just, it's me with me. Like, it ain't me and you, it's me and me. So catch me after this race, because right now I'm locked in and you're not gonna break my focus. Like, you know.
Nah, that's
what's I'm watching the leg before me, because I'm seeing how they're doing, who's where, what I gotta do. I'm mapping out the track, because it's like, you know, you're running a race is strategic, especially if you're doing something like 400 and up. It's like very strategic of like how you. Well, no, all races are strategic, so it's like
I'm the 400.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what big wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even more so because you're just covering more like ground.
The more ground you cover, I would say it's more strategy that goes into it. But I mean, you know.
I guess you got to be prepared for it.
For anything, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just like, I'm more so like looking at all my invisible markers on the floor of like, okay, I got this and this and this. Like, I'm setting myself up for, you know, success. So that's kind of what I would do for the race.
I mean, that makes sense. So you went to Stony Brook. Was Stony Brook your first choice?
You know, it's not my first choice.
I didn't know that. I thought you wanted to be a SeaWorld so bad. You know?
Evan, stop capping on this podcast. So my first choice, I wanted to go to HBCU. So like going out of New York, going to HBCU.
Anyone in particular?
I had applied. I wanted to go to VSU. Okay. a lot. That's
Virginia State, right?
Yeah, yeah, or VCU. I want to go to one of the two of those. But I was pretty much open to like different HBCUs, and I had applied to a lot. Like I was focusing my efforts there, and I think back to when I had like a real moment with my mom of like, you know, you're not as good as you think you are, type of thing. like a reality check. So it was like, okay, you know, let's focus on in-state schools, blah blah blah. And then my mom actually wanted me to go to Binghamton because, you know, Lane was at Binghamton.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, you want to go to Binghamton? And she was like, yeah. I was like, okay, I'll go to Stony Brook. So like, that's how I ended up at Stony Brook. It wasn't because I wanted to go there. It wasn't because it was a first choice. It was more so like I had to pick from like a set of options. And I just, at that point, I didn't really care where I went in the sense of like, none of these are like my dream schools, you know, because my dream school was out of state. It was right. To be out of state. Like that was my dream situation. And I just feel like upstate, I just think it's cold. I don't know why I thought that, but like, I just think it's cold all year round. It's probably not true, but like, that's what I thought back then. So I was just like, okay, Stony Brook, I can go home if I want to. I can stay as long as I want to. So, because my mom was very much like a, you need to dorm. Like, all of my kids are going out of the house and you're dorming. Like, you're not allowed to go anywhere local.
She said, get the fuck out.
Herma said, you're not staying here for school. You got to dorm. And I think that's like the best decision she made, but she put her foot down. She's like, you're going to college and you're not going to be home while you do it. So, figure it out. So,
yeah. I feel it. So, what was the college like for you? Like, did you enjoy being, because Stony Brook's pretty far out from like where you were staying at. So, like, what was the cultural difference like being out there?
Being was out, there like, any? You mean like being like that's like town wise cultural difference, yeah, or just like school wise? You know,
being out there, both.
So I grew up in Uniondale. So I grew up around people that look like me. Like we were the majority, you know.
Niggas.
So. So, it's like I'm going from that to. We were 6%, and that's Black and Latino students
together. Come on. Together, okay.
Together, we made up 6%.
One band, one sound. Okay.
Yeah, one band, one sound. They said, "Listen, here, damn," you know. So, you know, so it kind of created this culture of like everyone knew everybody because we were all going to the same events. We were all going to the same, you know, things to hang out at because there wasn't so many of us. So. I think that, you know something? Let me tell you something. I remember when the whole thing happened with Trayvon Martin, right?
Yeah.
And we did a protest on campus. And I will never forget, there's these group of white students that weren't far from where we were. And, you know, we're saying our chants, we're doing everything. And the white girl said, oh, he got what he deserved, right? And I was so shocked. I wanted to curse that bitch out. But it also was like a shock to me because like I hadn't been in like close proximity with people who just would think that way, you know, because again, I was always surrounded by people who looked like me. So if you had a lot of that, I was the president of a club and the vice president of that same club. So like I saw more of like the politics of things and like them trying to take away funding and you're fighting for this and you're fighting for that mm-hmm. because, you know, they want to combine certain clubs when they really should be separate because they're two separate cultures. And so, but I will say that I was also social, you know, I was very social on campus. I had a job that put me in like the middle of
everything.
Everything, yeah. It was kind of mixy, really. That job is hella mixy. Yeah. So it's like, because of that job, I had met a lot of people. Then being in part of the club that I was a part of, I was meeting a lot of people. Then being the sister of, you know, someone else that was in a frat, I was meeting a lot of people. So like, it was a great experience, but there was like, you know, those times where you're just like, oh damn, this is the ugliness of the world too, you know?
Right. Did you ever think about joining a sorority? You would think with your brother being afraid, you would, you know, did it ever come?
You're not going to get me jumped, okay?
I'm just asking.
The thought was there.
So you didn't pursue
it? And don't ask me nothing more.
I was going to ask you, what's the reason why you didn't join it? Just like cultural differences?
No, well, there's... So there's more to than you can't just join a sorority or a frat. They have to, like, you know,
you gotta be pre-chosen.
You gotta be chosen as well, I guess, right? Because mm-hmm. I don't want people coming for me. Mm-hmm. It was an interest of mine, but I also didn't do. I'm gotta choose my words carefully. I just had a lot of distraction going on, and right. It wasn't something that, like, I could entertain past an idea.
Right. Yeah. Your own stuff going on. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I could entertain it past an idea, but yeah. So it just remained an interest.
Okay. Okay. Were you part of any groups on campus?
No. What do you mean? Yeah, I was. Groups, I was a part of CSO.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So we had. So I was a part of CSO, which is the Caribbean Student Organization.
Okay, that's what's up. What's the party life? I always want to ask you. How was the party life in Stony Brook?
Party life.
Was niggas getting down. Like, what was the vibe like?
Well, you know, Cheyenne. I used to always come to Stony Brook.
Yeah, by them, yeah, without me.
Yeah, where were you at?
I'm cool. You heard what happened with the boys without them.
I remember because they got to that fight thing that happened. And honestly, that is what changed the party life. That whole situation is what changed the party life. Because before, they used to be able to have on-campus parties, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, you didn't have to go off campus to turn up, to have fun, blah, blah, blah. And then, but they were kind of getting stricter and stricter with that. And then, if my memory serves me correct, there was a misunderstanding, let's call it.
Right.
And they shut that shit down. Like, they really said no more parties. Because, like, they made it so it was impossible. Because it's like, you had to go through, like, this process of, like, signing in a guest and doing this and doing that. When those things, like... People make decisions about parties sometimes day of, right? But it's like you couldn't make those day of decisions. You had to make them weeks in advance.
Like, yeah.
It was like so much stipulation. So that killed on campus parties. And so you had to go off campus. But then, like, the culture of, like, off campus parties also kind of died down a little bit, like the club life. It was at a height at one point before I think I got there, and then it was like kind of dying down. I don't know how it is now though, because I haven't partied around Stony Brook since I graduated. I don't have no desire to party with 21
children. Yeah.
So I don't know how it is now, but yeah, when I was there, I mean, I used to go to the club. Like, you listen, we went to the club, we whatever, but it's like you finding your way there, finding your way back could be a process sometimes. You was listen, they had this car service and you used to just be packed in there like sardines, and it just, you got in that little ass car and you went to the club, you know. Yeah. So it was what it was, and I feel like we made the best of it. And I feel like if you would have transferred from a different school that had, like, a broader culture of that, then you'd be like, oh, this is, like, a step down. But I feel like if this is all you knew, then it was fun because you're not comparing it to, like, something else, you know?
Right, right. What did college teach you, like, overall? I know you learned things in classes, but, like, what's something like a life lesson that college taught you?
I feel like college... That's where I grew up, I feel like, mm-hmm. in certain ways, because I think I said it before, like, I was spoiled. So I hadn't even done my own laundry before I went to college.
Niggas living so good.
I was living the good life. Like, my mom used to do my laundry to the point where she had to literally write out directions on, like, a notepad and give it to me when I went to college. Yeah, it was so bad. And so I feel like when you dorm, kind of gain the, like, some type of independence, you figure out how to be, like, resourceful. Right. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like college taught me how to be resourceful, how to use the things around me, whether it's people, whether it's services, whether it's, like, anything. Like, finessing, you know? Yeah. Like, you understand finesse. You understand getting your work on time and then turning up right after. You understand how to, like, put things at play. So I feel like it really taught me how to be resourceful. And kind of make the best out of what you had. Like, okay, these are my meal points, all right? But, like, I want to eat this, so how do I make this work for what I can? Especially because, like, my first 2 years, I didn't have a car. So, like, I was limited in my options to do certain things. So it's like, you have to be creative. You have to, like, you know, pull together or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, man. I think a lot of people, that's the one thing, like, college has taught them, like, how to finesse, like, how to just, like, find your way through shit, man. Like,
Definitely. All the, it was finesses. A good experience.
I mean, college sounded like it was fun, man. So, how did you decide that you wanted to go into the field that you're in?
You know, it's funny because, like, the answer that I tell in, like, an interview or, like, professionally, it's, like, part of the truth, but it's not really,
you're
like...
You're talking to me, though. Like, let's, you know what I mean?
I know, so I'm going to give you the real answer, but it's just, like, the answer that I be saying to people.
What you be telling them people when they be
interviewing?
I just
be like, oh, I had this huge passion from when I was doing this, when I was doing that. But it's, like, partially true. It's, like, partially true, but it's not, like, the full story. I guess the story is... I had a rough senior year, if you know, you know. And so I didn't understand what my next step would be after I graduated because I got my degree in psychology. And if you know, getting a degree in psychology, the bulk of your options are at like the master's or even doctorate level.
Right.
There's not so much options at just like a bachelor's level. But going back to school just wasn't the fourth, like the thing on my mind because I just had so much going on in my personal life. And I remember counselor. That's what it's called. Oh gosh. So I had like a regular advisor and then like an advisor through like my department, major department. So in sitting down with them and just talking about like options after, you know, my bachelor's, I know that HR kind of came up, but I kind of like brushed it off. So once I graduated, my cousin, she kind of got me a job working at her company, kind of doing back end office work and operations. Perfect. But then it's like, okay, so what's the next step? So I've always just been like, what's the next step? What's the next goal? Like, you know me, I'm always having things at play. That's very much you.
Yeah.
It's very much me. Like, I'm a hustler. So I'm like, I gotta do this. I gotta do that. Like, I'm always thinking about, you know, making smart moves, making real moves. So it's just like, okay, so what can I do next? Like, what is the next move look for me? And so it was just like, all right, maybe I can go into HR. Like, okay, so how do I go into HR? Like, what does that look like? Because I didn't really have no mentor. It was just me kind of figuring it out on my own while, you know, still going through what I was going through. So I was at first applying for like operations roles, but then that wasn't working out. So like, okay, let me kind of be a recruiting coordinator, like recruiting something. So I'm like, I could kind of finesse my way into the door because I did have a little bit of recruiting experience at Stony Brook. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, let me do this. Let me just, you know, do this and get more money because that was like top of mind. Like, I need to get more money. I need to do something where I can move up. Like I can have a career, like a next step. So that's kind of like how I broke into HR because then from there, I kind of still, I'm strategic, I'm hustling, I'm networking, I'm getting, but I'm also becoming more knowledgeable. I'm also becoming more mature. I'm also playing my cards, right? I'm also, you know, like with each move that I made, I soaked in all the knowledge of what was around me and then was making some smart ass moves.
Right.
So, I mean, I can go into each of my work history and tell you where I ended up here, but the gist of how I fell into HR is just that, like I fell into HR because I had to just like, play the cards that I was dealt and use that and make some smart ass moves. And here we are.
Oh, you got any advice you would give to anybody getting into HR? Or wanting to?
I would say that HR is an experience-based field. And so while getting your master's degree in it is nice and having all of that, the accolades are been nice. The important thing about HR is getting that experience. Like,
right.
However you can get it, and even in small increments, get that experience under your belt, and that will move you up quicker than going for your master's or anything like that.
Wow, all right. I think that's good advice. Get in the field, niggas.
Get in the field. And learn. Like my whole thing is, like, I will learn from different people in the field and figure out their journey and take in their own advice. Because it's like, if I can get to where you are in half the time, I'm gonna try to do it. So I'm gonna like soak in your knowledge, soak in your wisdom, and, you know, make them proper adjustments.
Right, I hear that. So let's talk about how me, you, and I met.
Yo, okay, you gonna tell your story because we don't have the same story.
right, at all, because, you know, my memory's just better. So my mama, she ain't let me go nowhere, right? So if I wanted to go anywhere, she had to meet the niggas I was hanging out with, all kind of shit, right?
I love your mama. Shout out to Evelyn.
Yeah, shout out to her. She cool. So Ray was like, yo, nigga, you trying to hoop? I'm like, yeah, but, you know, you got to come through. First of all, I don't know where you live, nigga. So first of all, come whoop me and we'll walk back to your crib. You know what I mean? So came to my crib, met my family, whatever, what have you. And we walking back to your house. And we just hooping. We just back there hooping, like, all day. Like, you know what I'm saying? But then I hear this loud-ass girl talking about, man, something. She's looking for something. And he's like, I don't know where that's at, Rihanna, whatever. And then she says, y'all want something to drink?
why do you make me sound like that?
Yeah, that's how you sounded in my mind. That's what I heard, you know.
Whatever.
You want something to drink? So he was like, yeah. And you came out with the biggest cup of Kool-Aid I've ever seen. Most sugary.
I did not make you
Kool-Aid. Diabetes in a cup of Kool-Aid ever.
I did not make you Kool-Aid. Like, and we have to agree with that. Like, I didn't have Kool-Aid in my house.
You did that day.
I did not have Kool-Aid.
You did.
And then I had a Jamaican ass mama. She was not bringing no Kool-Aid
into the house. Kool-Aid, bro.
Probably syrup and water or something, but like, it tasted like Kool-Aid.
It was red and tasted like Kool-Aid.
I'm telling you, it was syrup and water probably, but it was not Kool-Aid.
Same thing.
Whatever. My memory doesn't go as far back as yours, but I did not serve you Kool-Aid. I remember you always being at the house, and then me, I did bother my brother a lot. So, like, you know, so I should always be around. And I just feel like me and you just clicked. Like, I don't remember, like, the specific moment, whatever, but we just clicked. And then we just started, like, shit-talking to each other. But
yeah,
it was just,
always.
Like, you would just verbally abuse me, and then I would just... Yeah. That's cap.
It's always funny because you make it seem like you don't be throwing haymakers too.
Tell the people what you call me.
Oh, you skinny. I called you Kevin Garnett.
Okay, what else do you call me?
I called you Kevin Garnett. Oh, La Cienega, Boulevard Esk. You have
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. You're rude. So.
<That's true. laughs> You call me Humpty Dumpty, nigga. Like,
because I had to come back because you was about to be talking about me.
Come on,
so, yeah. You had a great fall.
See, that's wow. I was thinking back. That was like almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah, that was a minute ago.
That was middle school. That was seventh grade. I remember.
Yeah. So when I first met you, I think we were elementary school. But when we started becoming more friends, it was middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
Almost 20 years ago.
Damn, you really old.
You nigga, so are you. Like, like a year younger than me. Stop it.
No, you are really old. But yeah, I think our friendship just progressed. Like, we just became closer and closer. And then we just became best friends. Like, you my nigga, for real. You stuck with me.
Absolutely. What do you think is the funniest moment that we've had together?
Dude, they're probably not appropriate. They're probably gonna get one of us canceled. I feel like all of our funny moments probably get one of us canceled because I feel like we take some ignorant shit when it's just the two of us.
Yeah.
So I can't say the funniest moment. I feel like we just be funny together. Like, I think when I texted you yesterday, like, why do I look cross eyed? Like, am I really cross eyed? Like.
You like Forrest Whitaker.
So I feel like that's probably like the most appropriate thing that's recent that I can remember. Because that's like everything.
I think us going to the Jets game was one of the funniest shits. Like, that was why was that funny? It was just a funny ass day. Like, from the parking to like that white lady that was behind us during the game.
Tell people they gave you COVID. Gave you COVID.
Yeah, I was definitely sick as hell after that.
That was a funny day because you would have thought it was the Eagles home game, honestly.
I thought we was going to fight our way out.
We.
Man, one sound.
No, ain't no one band, one sound because you was about to let me out to dry.
Hey, it was a lot. There's a lot of niggas in there, man.
You was like, man, if you get to argument at this game, I can't fight them for you.
Exactly.
So if you would have got jumped in Eagle territory, I'd have been like, I'll meet you at the car. I don't know.
Well, I'm supposed to fight the world, nigga?
At least try.
That's crazy.
I think I think the other side is crazy. You're going to let me get jumped by myself.
I wasn't going to let you get jumped.
Evan, you literally said, if you get to a fight, I'm not jumping in.
I would have broken up aggressively.
No, you wouldn't have. Evan, did you forget that I know you in real life? You'd have been like, oh, damn. You would have tweeted about it. You'd have tweeted about it.
Aggressively. No. All right, so I want to ask you, what has our friendship taught you? Or something you learned from our friendship?
This is a good one. What has our friendship taught me?
Get trust. Your jokes up. Get your jokes up. Oh, yeah, trust. Yeah.
Get your jokes up because, you know, sparring with you ain't easy. So I feel like I was going to be on go. But I feel like trust because I feel like, me and you joke about this all the time. Like, you could write a tell-all book about me, you know?
It's coming one day.
I wish you would.
Yeah, on some Britney Spears shit. Like, yo.
I wish the fuck you would. Okay, I would stomp on you. Don't do that. With my big feet.
Right.
I think trust because I feel... And I think that goes with, like, being there for each other because I feel like from high school till now, I feel like we've gone through so much shit and, like, we've been one of the first people we've told about these things. Like, you've experienced mm-hmm. them with me and vice versa. So it really taught me, like, you can have trust and also that you can have a friendship with the opposite sex and it be healthy and not be toxic and not be, like, you know, a hidden agenda.
Right.
You know, like, we're just friends and, like, I'm comfortable in that, you know?
Yeah man. That's how it should be.
Listen to the people online, child. You can't do that.
Online niggas is online niggas, you know.
Weird people.
I'm going to be honest. Yeah. I think our friendship has kind of, like, taught me the importance of, like, community. You know what I mean? Yeah. Having a tribe. You know, I'm very much a lone wolf nigga. And I still struggle with that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I don't need, you know, I feel like I don't need a lot of people a lot of time. I kind of just do my own thing. But your friend kind of taught me how important it is. It's okay to lean on people and, you know what I mean, have trust in people and have faith in people. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. I love when you're just so sentimental. It's just like, oh, you really do like me.
Because you think it's cat most of the time, which is hilarious.
because that's not how we operate. So when it's like anything else, I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Damn, Ray, that was time flew by. Look at this.
Wow. Did I do good?
You are a great guest. I appreciate
it. Canceled.
Right. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you so much for coming on, Reed. I really appreciate you. Thank you for being my friend and my sister throughout all these years, man. I love and appreciate you.
I love you too, and I thank you for being my brother. And I thank you for, after years of begging, y'all. I've been begging to be on this podcast for years, and you better leave this in there. I wouldn't say
begging, aggressively asking.
Leave this part in there, because I want the people to know. Your girl been trying to get on for years. And I finally made it. You know, when you asked me the other day to be on, I was like, oh my God, my prayers have been answered finally.
Now this. Let the people know where they can find you. If you want them to. If you don't want them niggas to find you, we get it right now.
I mean, my Instagram is private. I guess, yeah, my Instagram is my last name. So R-E-I-D, my lips. So read my lips _. You catch that play on words, guys?
You're so proud of that. I am.
And then my Twitter is the same thing, except that there's an _ before and after. So it's _ read my lips _. But yeah, I really be chilling. Yeah.
Right. Follow her on Twitter for her hot football takes.
Facts.
All right, and just like that, we can get out of here. Appreciate you guys listening. This is another episode of House Calls.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.